Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Laura Horn Art Podcast. Richie and I are back today. We've had a big break, a bit bigger than what we expected, but we are certainly very happy to be back. And we are diving into a very hot topic at the moment in the art community. We are talking about Instagram and whether it is still the best social media platform for artists. This is something that I have been considering myself over the last few months. I shared about it recently in an email newsletter that I sent out, and I was overwhelmed with the response. So I know this is something that many of you are grappling with, and you're getting frustrated with the app. So in this episode, we are going to go through the platforms that we have been looking at. So Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest. What else have I got on the list? Oh, I've also got the platform that is getting a lot of talk at the moment. It's a new platform, but it's not a new platform. It's new to us because we only heard about it a few days ago, and it's called Vero. So we did a little bit of digging around about that. So we'll talk about that as well. So before we get into the episode, I want to talk about one of the main reasons why we ended up having an extended break from the podcast. And the reason was that we were spending all of our time developing a new mixed media art course, the Creative Blend Art Program. This program is for anyone that wants to establish a consistent art practice and dig in with what makes their work unique. So each month we release a new class and it has a different theme. So we are covering things like working in a series, getting confident about using colour, making big pieces, working with collage. There's all sorts of topics. The topics have come about from feedback from within the community. So it's a really beautiful, engaging program. You can find out more about it if you head on over to my website, laurahornart.com/classes. So what has happened to Instagram and why is everyone in such an uproar over it? There's a huge backlash happening at the moment. And the main reason is that Instagram is changing so rapidly and it's becoming a very different platform to what it started out as. It started out as a photo sharing app. And if you think back to the beginnings of Instagram, there wasn't any video, there wasn't any ads, it was chronological, and it was a wonderful place for artists to present their work. And we could present our work almost like a portfolio. It gave us a place where we could easily show brands or buyers what we were doing. And it also gave us an opportunity to connect with other artists and to build a following. You know, people were able to see your art, but also connect your art with who you were as a person. So it was incredibly valuable for artists and photographers. So now what's happening is the app is moving towards a TikTok type experience. Now, I have only been on TikTok for about maybe 3 minutes in total. I downloaded the app, had a quick look at it, and it just felt like it wasn't for me straight away. I was just like, I don't think I can do this. It's so fast-paced and everything is video, and it just didn't feel like it could possibly be for me. I don't know. Have you downloaded the app TikTok?
The only time I've ever seen TikTok is because it's linked to Instagram. So people would upload their TikTok videos to Instagram.
Yeah. And you can post pretty much anything you put on Instagram to any other app. It's not that it's the same company. Instagram and Facebook are owned by the same company. But there are other apps where you can share to through Instagram.
Yeah, you're a late adopter to Instagram because you're talking about Instagram as if it was always being able to share and business and that kind of stuff. But Instagram at the very beginning was a square format and you could only upload what you took on your phone. That was it.
I mean, I was there fairly early on. I was there before it became commercialized.
Yeah. When you came on, you were able to take photos from your library. So you could take a really nice photograph with a professional camera, crop it and bring it into Instagram.
Yeah. I did start when it was square before they brought in the 4x5. So I do remember it being that. But getting back to TikTok and its the changes towards being more like TikTok. If you go into Instagram Reels and you stay on the Reels feed, I guess that's the closest match to what TikTok would be like.
Yeah, I would see the little TikTok watermark at the bottom of the corner. And that's all I knew about TikTok. Like, I've never downloaded the app. I don't have an account. Nothing like that.
From what I understand, the algorithm for TikTok... Sorry, TikTok? TikTok? No, it's not top. It's not.
Okay,
putting it down the list.
Okay, boomer.
Okay, yeah. I'm listening to us talk about this and thinking we sound so outdated.
We are, like...
I think we've expired.
I don't even know what TikTok looks like.
Like, I'm sure our audience has a much better idea of what we're talking about. So I don't know why we're doing this episode. Anyway, where was I going with all of this?
Something about TikTok's algorithm.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So our daughter, who is 14, she told me that TikTok is brilliant because it serves up exactly what you want. So the algorithm is incredibly intuitive. And you were watching something the other day talking about the privacy policy on
Joe
TikTok.
Rogan.
Yeah. And just how much access TikTok has to everything you touch and do, which makes sense because how do they get an algorithm to work so effectively? Well, it sounds a bit dodgy to me that this app can deliver up exactly what you're looking for.
The fact that in its terms and conditions, it says that they have access to your keystroke memory. So basically that's just a way of saying that they know everything you type.
Yeah, and it said something about access to all your files on your computer.
On your phone.
So it's pretty extensive what TikTok can dig into.
And it can access your files from a computer you're not logged onto. That was the big one.
And as you said, it's owned by China.
Yeah.
Chinese company.
But it's highly addictive. So when Sophia says, oh, it's so intuitive, it knows exactly what I want, is that, yeah, the second you open that app, you're hooked. I'm not saying, like, it is what it is. Like, that's just the way it is. That's the world we live in today. But that app is 100% designed to hook you in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't remember what I was listening to, but someone was talking about the fact that the app is more content-driven rather than creator-driven. In the sense that when you are experiencing what you are watching, you get entertained as you go, but you're not necessarily looking at that person's name. You don't really recognize them as a person as much as Instagram, whereas Instagram was really good for building your identity and people making that connection, going over and following you. The key factor was that they were following you, whereas on TikTok, people go onto the feed just to be entertained by this constant flow of short form. And I would say entertainment.
It's mindless entertainment.
Yeah, I think that's where it's gone to, is mindless entertainment. And I do go onto Instagram and I go onto the Reels app every now and then, and I go on there to numb out, which is not the reason I would go onto Instagram a few years ago or even a year ago. But some of it I really enjoy. I don't want to be overly negative.
Yeah, you know, I love some of the Reels.
There is some stuff in there that I find entertaining, makes me laugh, might inspire certain things. I love watching dancing. Like, there's some dancing ones on there that I love. I love the artistry of really good dancing. So there is stuff on there that I like. But what I've noticed is my experience and reasons for going to the platform are completely different to what they were a year or two ago.
Remember, we used to like have to curate our feed. You know, we'd have our feed that would like have specific colors. And so when you went onto someone's feed to follow them, you'd be like, oh, wow, these look amazing. So when you flicked through their feed, they'd want to follow you. Now people aren't even coming to your feed. It's just a real flick, a real flick, a real flick. It's so hard to get somebody to follow you.
I heard that basically curating your feed is dead. Yeah. Like, it's not something to be worried about anymore. It's a waste of time. And if you're sharing a lot of videos and maybe just taking screenshots as the cover images of your reels, you'll notice when you go onto people's feeds, and mine included, that they're getting kind of messy looking.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, sometimes having a photo where you've got a bit more like of a, you know, maybe your arm or something showing or whatever, but it's not like beautifully done in a beautiful photograph. It's just like a screenshot. But, you know, people aren't really going there to find things. They're finding your content through going through the Reels feed.
Yeah. I remember about 2-3 years ago, like photographers on YouTube, like big creatives were saying that, you know, that portfolios are dead. Like websites are dead. You know, everything's on Instagram. When you go to a job, like the people will want to see your Instagram. So your Instagram had to be perfectly curated. It had to look a certain way. It had to be beautiful. Now those same photographers, videographers, cinematographers on YouTube, they did a massive backtrack about 6 months ago. And it was all about get off Instagram, get your content into a web page, onto a website, get that website information out there. Going back to the old school way of having your best work on a platform that you're in control of.
Well, I can see that happening because I don't feel like my Instagram feed is a very good portfolio anymore because it's filled up with videos and tips and tutorials and things, whereas years ago it would be a really good place to point someone that might be interested in licensing my work or getting a commission or something like that. And now I feel like I do need to direct people over to my website portfolio for that rather than Instagram.
But you're really lucky because I called you earlier on a late adapter, but you weren't a late adapter when it came to your website. Like your website was always your baby. You always looked after it. And it's almost like you were so proud of it. You wanted people to see it. Like it wasn't for any foreseeing the future and, you know, you knew this was going to happen. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but it's almost like I love my website. I want people to come and see it.
Yeah, I've always prioritized my website right from the very beginning. I've kept it up to date. I have redeveloped it, improved it, looked at different ways to make it better. Recently, I was looking at an artist on Instagram that's pretty big. And I thought, oh, I'll go over and check their website. And I was really surprised that the website was so small. You know, it hadn't been updated in years. There wasn't really anything on it. And I was so surprised because the person had such a big Instagram following and had heaps of content on Instagram, lots of tips and tutorials as well as art. And I was amazed that there was none of that on the website. And I thought, that is risky when you have everything on one platform, and that is certainly becoming apparent at the moment with the changes to Instagram. So I wanted to talk a bit about why Instagram is doing this. Why are they making these changes so fast to be similar to TikTok? And the main reason is because TikTok has grown at an extraordinarily fast rate, and particularly with young people. Young people are flocking to TikTok and Snapchat, and they are not really interested in Instagram. And that's not good for the longevity of Instagram if it's not bringing in any young people. Instagram also doesn't have things that some of the other apps have that do keep them going even with an older base. So Facebook has Messenger. It also has Marketplace.
Oh, yeah.
So it has got two things that are really quite big parts of many people's lives. So they have that to fall back on. They've also led the way with Facebook advertising. So they have certain things that they can draw on. Instagram is in a bit of a state of confusion about what it is. There is a risk. I think there is actually a real risk with Instagram, like a real risk that this is a platform that could plummet. And the way they're behaving makes me feel that way, because they are making changes so fast. And because when you think of Instagram, you think they just copy. They copy Snapchat. They copy TikTok. They are just so desperately trying to hang on and figure out where they fit and how to stay relevant. And that concerns me. And also, people forget that social media apps die. They really do. A lot of them, they're dying all the time. The smaller ones come in and they die. And bigger ones like MySpace What are some other ones that have had their moment?
Flickr,
you know, things like that. They do have a lifespan, and Instagram has been around for quite a while. There's a good chance without something really robust to keep it going that it could die off.
But something like that that makes an absurd amount of money for its owners and shareholders, they will not let that die easily.
I still think it's probably not, I said that it might die, but I mean, it probably won't die. But
the thing is, like if you're a young person coming through, right, you're getting your first phone. So let's say Asher, for example, right, he's 10. So he'll be getting his first phone in what, 2 years' time, 3 years' time? He'll be like, well, I don't need Instagram. Like, I don't want to talk to my mom and my dad. Mm. You know, he'll just go straight onto TikTok or the next thing. Like, and I think Instagram sees that.
Yeah, and they need future generations on the app. And as we get older, statistically, we spend less time on social media. So that's another factor. Certainly, you're always going to need new audience coming through an app to keep it going for the very, very long term. I mean, even Facebook, I'm not sure what's going to happen when all of us oldies
are gone. Well, that might be its time span, you know? That might
be because young people certainly aren't going onto Facebook. I think young people are on YouTube. I think they're on Snapchat, TikTok, probably Pinterest.
Pinterest is just chugging along nicely, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think Pinterest is an unsung hero as far as, you know, what it can do for artists. It is actually quite a powerhouse in our art business, and yet it sort of goes under the radar. So we'll get into that. But before we do, I guess the main reason that artists are leaving Instagram or thinking about leaving Instagram is because they don't want to engage in this new kind of way of existing on a platform. So they don't necessarily want to be creating this short form video content, and the algorithm isn't really serving artists very well. It's this different kind of algorithm that is showing up content to people rather than really encouraging people to develop a relationship with an artist and follow them and get to know their brand. So artists are thinking about where might be better to go to show their work and to build community. So what I thought we could do is run through some of the platforms that are possibilities, things that artists might want to consider. So let's start with Twitter. And I wanted to bring this one into the mix. It's not an app I'm particularly familiar with, but you mentioned a while ago that there are some photographers who are jumping ship and moving their portfolio and their communities over to Twitter. Now, Twitter has made a couple of changes so that it does do a good job of allowing you to share high quality photographs. I think you can upload photographs in 4K now. You can also use the 3x2 portrait crop, so you're not limited to 4x5 like you are on Instagram. So it's quite a good place for sharing images. Twitter is more well known for the banter, the little sort of short text captions, big comment threads, that kind of thing. So it's never really appealed to me. To me, I've always thought that Twitter would be a massive time suck because I feel like it's a place where you could just go down so many rabbit holes. It also feels a bit messy and chaotic to me when I go over to the app. It just feels like a bit of everything is coming into my feed. It's like politics, it's this, it's that. It's an interesting approach. From what I understand, when you like something on Twitter, it can then get shown to whatever you liked can then get shown to your followers, the same as if you retweet something. So it feels a bit like a box of chocolates with all sorts of different things and you never quite know what you're going to get. I'm interested on your thoughts because you mentioned photographers are heading over there.
Twitter isn't a really big thing here in Australia. For whatever reason, it's just not. Lots of sports personalities in the UK, especially in America, all the things I follow, they're all on Twitter, you know? So basketball players, boxers, footballers, that kind of thing, they all send out tweets. Not really that big in Australia. Like, I don't tweet my daughter. I could send her a DM or a text on Instagram or, you know, she'll contact me through Facebook if she sees something on Marketplace. But Twitter just isn't a part of our lives here. And so the only thing I really knew about Twitter is from podcasts. And everybody seems to agree that Twitter is the most toxic platform on social media. Like, it can get really, really bad.
Well, that's, you know, that's one of the reasons I might go over to Twitter or at least Google it. Because you know how they share, or sometimes on YouTube, they share those videos where they show the tweets that...
Mean tweets?
Yeah, the mean tweets. Yes.
They read them out?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. That's on Kimmel Live, I think.
Yeah. So I was like, that's why I go to Twitter.
Yeah,
for the toxic, nasty stuff. But yeah, and I mean, that would concern me. That's not the kind of platform that I want to spend a lot of time on. So yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, but back to the photographer thing. I was on a job a couple of months ago. I was shooting video and I was with the photographer. And he's getting 90% of his business through Instagram. He doesn't have a Twitter account. We were at the gym the other day. A social media video crew came down to film one of the guys that I coach. And we just got chatting and they don't have a Twitter account. They don't have a website. They're all content from Instagram, TikTok and Snapchat.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have certainly had the debate in my head around, is it that bad or are we just enjoying complaining and whinging and moaning about it?
Yeah, because taking it back to the creatives that I follow on YouTube. So we have photographers, videographers, cinematographers. They're all complaining about Instagram because they love Instagram. They love what Instagram used to be. It was a community. They could share their work. People could share their work. They could use hashtags. And they loved it. Like they're upset that Instagram, the old Instagram, is gone.
I think that's a very good point because I think what's driving it is that Instagram actually was pretty great.
It was amazing.
And many of us got our start on Instagram. And one thing that I felt early on in Instagram was that it felt like there was room for everyone to succeed. It felt like we could cheer each other on because there was room for all of us to grow. And many of us were experiencing growth at the same time. And it didn't feel as competitive. Now it all feels a little bit more perplexing and confusing where some artists seem to know how to handle the changes and are doing quite well, but other artists are really struggling. And certainly in my analytics, if I go in there, my reach on my posts, particularly when I post things that are still photographs and things that just aren't as engaging. Some still photographs still do okay, but they have to be kind of like the perfect combination of caption, photograph, and really like bam, you know, really good high level content.
The beautiful thing about the old Instagram was, I'm just thinking of all the podcasts we've ever done and all the interviews you've ever done. It's always been the artist that had a baby, was stuck at home. I wasn't stuck at home, but looking for something to do and then start painting. And then all of a sudden, they fell in love with it and they became amazing at it. Now, the beautiful thing about Instagram was that person could just take a photograph of their art, put it up, and a couple of hashtags saying, oh, I did a course, hashtag whatever course they did, at whoever the artist was, this is my piece, and they would put it up. And it would get a certain amount of likes, certain amount of shares, and they might get a couple of followers from it, right? But that's their art. Now, in order to do that, that lady would probably have to do a song and dance, 3 cartwheels, a backflip, tell a joke, do a voiceover, pick whatever song to match,
yeah,
and put it out into the world.
Yeah, and you know, do some research and read an article or two. And it's the work that goes into succeeding on Instagram now is much, much higher. And I was watching a video about, someone was just talking about how they post their stories in a day. And it was on YouTube, you know, they sort of talk through their process. And they might have done something with Reels as well. And I was watching and I was like, there's no way in the world I would have time to do that. Yes. Like setting up a camera in the kitchen.
Absolutely.
And then moving over here and then changing the lighting and then writing the caption and then making it move and bringing in an animation. And mm-hmm. Like, that's like 2 weeks of work in my mind.
Yeah.
For one day of stories and Reels. So It's the amount of work, and I think the amount of work involved in Instagram is seriously decreasing people's enjoyment of their platform.
But you're not just posting your art. It has to be you. You know what I mean? Like, you have to put your face in there. You have to put your voice in there. You have to show more of yourself. And I know for a fact that that's not what I'm about. I don't want to be making reels. I don't want to be doing that. I just want people to see my stuff.
Yeah, and it really does feel like Instagram has shifted more to this sort of entertainment model. And I do wonder, like, how big is the impact of creating entertaining content on actually selling art or selling courses as well. I don't know that it's the best medium, like a short little 20, 30 second clip. Is it the best way? I feel like I get more traction on my longer form content, which is why we are looking at some of these other platforms, which we'll talk about in a minute. My longer form newsletters, YouTube videos that maybe are 7 or 8 minutes long, that kind of content is what seems to drive, you know, interest in my art and in my classes more so than the little short videos, which I think people enjoy, but I don't know that it actually makes them want to go and do the class. They almost sort of feel like they're just getting a nice little snippet for free to inspire them, which is totally fine, but I don't know that it works as well.
Well, you can take people from your Instagram to YouTube because you're starting to flirt with YouTube. But these big YouTubers were using Instagram to get people to their YouTube, and now they're losing that. You know, they're losing, they can't grow on Instagram anymore.
Yeah, well, I think social media is always going to be important, and we need different kinds of social media platforms. Things like Instagram and Twitter and TikTok are these sort of more immediate, you know, short form content, which can help bring people over to longer form content. So the two work together. And so that's why I think some YouTubers might be looking at other places in order to bring people over to their YouTube channel. And the same thing goes for building your email list and getting traffic to your website. Like, I'm always on about, you've got to have a website, you've got to build your email list, but you can't just have a website and expect people to find it. You have to have ways to bring people over. And social media is the bridge. Yeah. It is the bridge. It's how you drive people to your website, or if you have an opt-in, you know, a lead magnet or something, a free PDF that people can download. You've got to have ways to communicate with people.
Your audience is on Instagram. Your audience is on Twitter. That's where your audience is.
Yes.
And I think what the issue that artists and creatives have is that, look, I have this amazing work and people love it, but you're not showing it to anybody. You're competing with 14-year-old girls and boys dancing in their bedrooms and making funny TikToks, and you're not giving me any of the love. You're not allowing my tribe to see my work.
Yeah.
And that's the crux, I think.
I think that's what people are getting frustrated by, is that their own followers are not getting an opportunity to see what they have to offer. And it's not through their choice. They're just not getting shown. It's not getting served up to them because they're trying different things. They're serving up other kinds of content to try and get people onto this fast-paced, entertainment-driven model.
Yeah. If Da Vinci and Picasso were alive today, nobody would know who they were, unless they were making videos of themselves doing TikToks and Snapchats. No one would know, because they'd stick the Mona Lisa up and the algorithm would say, oh yeah, not interested. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. We're reliant on the algorithm and the way that it's working.
It just goes to show how reliant we are.
Yeah. So just getting back to Twitter, I just wanted to touch on the fact that some artists share automatically their Instagram or Facebook content just gets automatically posted over onto Twitter. So that's very easy to set up. You can do that on any platform. I do it a bit on Facebook. So I share my Instagram content over to Facebook. I don't think doing that is ever enough. I don't think it's actually that beneficial to just blast your content everywhere, because in order for a platform to really engage and grow, it needs people to stay on the app, talk to the community and be a part of it. I feel like you're better off choosing something and going with it, like going in with it. If you really like having conversations, sharing your little tidbits and thoughts, then Twitter could be a really good place, but you would need to be over there and engaging with it rather than just pushing content onto it. Having said that, I would say that Pinterest is a little bit different in that respect. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Just on Twitter, I just don't know if people go to Twitter specifically looking for art or classes. I feel like it is a bit similar to TikTok in a way that people just go on there for entertainment, very in the moment kind of stuff.
News?
News is big, politics is big. I'm just not 100% sure. So Twitter is one that we've considered, but it's a no for us, isn't it?
I think because we don't know how to use it.
Yeah, for us, for where we are at. We're not experts on any of these. We're just sharing our own thoughts and experiences. So moving on to Pinterest. Pinterest is brilliant for artists. I get a huge benefit out of Pinterest with very, very minimal effort. And I say benefit because quite often in my classes, people say they found me through Pinterest. And I'd be like, wow, are people finding me through Pinterest? Because I'm not even really that active on Pinterest. And I went over and I was really shocked. This is a couple of years ago now, to find that my Pinterest page was getting a huge amount of views. I'm not quite sure what was driving it. I think having a really good website helps because people pin stuff from my website. And I have a very expansive website with a lot of pages, a lot of blog posts, podcast episodes, a lot of images that people pin. And that drives traffic to my website because when you pin something, it always has a clickable link. So if people are coming over to my website and just pinning stuff like crazy, then they're just driving traffic to my website because if other people click on that, they then get taken to the blog post. The thing about Pinterest that drives me crazy is, again, a bit like Twitter, it's chaotic. Like people pin stuff and it is attached to something else that it doesn't relate to. So that it'll be a photograph attached to a blog post, but the two will be
completely different.
And sometimes people pin stuff and it's not even my work. And when I go over there, I do get a little bit like, oh, it's such a mess. It's such a mess.
Because you're not in control
of
it.
I can't clean it up because it's other people's pins. That's the other thing. So you've got people pinning stuff and you can't control it. So for anyone who's a bit controlling, it's like, oh my goodness, I can't do anything about all this. But anyway, aside from that, when I dig into the analytics of my website, 70% of my social media traffic, so social media traffic is anyone who comes over to my website from Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, or Pinterest, because they're the main platforms I'm on. 70% of it is from Pinterest. 20% is from Instagram. So I spend way more time on Instagram than Pinterest, but it drives way more traffic to my website. So it's a bit of a beast. So what I do now is I tend to go to Pinterest, or I use Tailwind. So Tailwind is a scheduling app. If anyone is interested in the specifics of my Pinterest strategy and how I do this, let me know and maybe we can do an episode on it. But basically I use this app because it enables you to schedule your pins in advance so that you can be pinning stuff while you're sleeping, and it sets up this schedule. So it just drops content in. So basically what I do is I create a whole lot of Pinterest content in one go. So I batch. So it's actually one of the few times that batching works for me. So about once a month, I take all my photographs that I've shared on Instagram, go over to my website, any podcasts, blogs, things like that. I load it up into my Pinterest, and it takes not long at all, like 10, 20 minutes, because you can go onto a website and there's like a little button you can press and you basically just adds everything into the scheduler. And then I might tweak it a bit and make sure it's fairly SEO friendly. So Pinterest is a search engine. People go in there and search. They go up onto the top of the feed and they type in if they're interested in mixed media art or art classes, tutorials. It's very search based, which makes it different from some of the other apps. And I try and, well, actually I say I try, I don't really try, but I have found that most of my stuff is quite SEO friendly anyway. And so it shows up for searches like abstract painting and things like that. It was funny actually because our daughter was looking for some art for her room on Pinterest and she was like, Mom, your stuff is all over Pinterest. Like with a like pure annoyance. She's like, what are you doing? Wrecking this face. Place. It's like, I can't even look on the app anymore, Mum. It's just you, you and you. So anyway, so for some reason my artwork has found quite a lot of traction over on the Pinterest app. I have it sort of set up almost on autopilot. So Pinterest is really good because you can share images. You can also repurpose reels. I've been sharing some video content over there, but video hasn't taken over in the same way that it has on Instagram. Pinterest still is very much full of beautiful photographs.
Can you follow an artist on Pinterest?
Yeah, you can follow an artist.
Can you comment on their stuff?
You can comment on their things and the links. I mean, the links are great. I mean, Instagram doesn't allow you to put a link on every post. Pinterest, you have a link. So if you have a blog post, you can put a photograph up, description of that blog post, and they can click on that link and go straight to the blog post. Same with a podcast, same with a piece of art, same with a class, tutorial. It's actually very good in that way.
I run into Pinterest all the time when I come to, like, you know, if I type in a, let's say I'm looking for a boxing glove or a pair of jeans. And when you type it into your Google search engine, it'll come up with the images underneath. And when you click on the image, it'll take me to Pinterest.
Yeah, so it shows up in your Google search a lot too. So that's another way that you get traffic, is you get traffic going over to Pinterest, which then might generate traffic back to your
website.
And people go to Pinterest very motivated to search for something. So people will go if they're renovating and they want ideas for their house, if they're planning a wedding, if they're thinking about a holiday. Like, people create Pinterest boards of recipes and it's a very motivated place. People go over and look for art classes or look for art for their bedroom or whatever it is. So it's a really good place to get people that are interested in what you are serving up.
Yeah. If you wanted like a wedding invitation template, if you start searching for that on Google, you will end up on Pinterest. You will click on an image with a small red P at the bottom corner and then it will ask you to set up an account. Because I run into that roadblock all the time because I don't have a Pinterest account.
Well, there you go. I didn't really know that. There are a lot of artists that share their Instagram images directly over to Pinterest. But again, that's not something I would suggest necessarily because that might drive traffic to your Instagram, which if you want to grow your Instagram, I guess that could be a good thing. But I prefer to upload the images separately and put website links. I'd rather the traffic going to my website than my Instagram. So the last thing I want to mention about Pinterest is that I have been experimenting with advertising over there. So rather than doing Facebook ads, I've been doing some Pinterest ads. And at the moment, I don't have much more to say about that because I can't get the pixel to work properly. So if anyone who does advertising knows how you need to put a pixel on your website page so that it can track all the information and give you reporting on how many clicks you're getting, how many conversions and all that sort of stuff, I can't get that to work. So I'm not able to see how well it's working, but I've heard a lot of good things about Pinterest advertising. And I feel like it makes sense because there's a lot of people over there searching for art, searching for classes. I will report back when I get my pixel working about that one. So let's move on to YouTube. And you mentioned that I've been flirting with the idea of doing a little bit more on YouTube. And up to now, I have mainly used YouTube to promote my classes. So I just share trailers. I haven't really worried about the fact that's all I'm sharing on the app. But I have recently seen a lot of artists building beautiful, engaged communities over on YouTube. And a couple of those artists I've included in my Creative Blend art program. So Sandy Hester was probably the first artist that really got me thinking more about YouTube. And Helen Wells, who's also been a guest in our year-long art program, she has a YouTube channel too. What I'm noticing is that there is a lot of chat and community and encouragement and kind comments. I'd always thought that YouTube was really nasty And it still can be. And I mean, the comments make me laugh now, but I think I've got a bit thick skinned over the years compared to maybe a few years back where I was convinced that everybody should like me. I've realized that now that's simply not possible, but I've been pleasantly surprised, and YouTube is a great place for people to build a strong connection to you as an artist, because you are able to share this longer form content. You can share little snippets of your life, your studio, your supplies, and that's what Instagram is starting to lack, that ability to build that connection. And so what I'm seeing is artists moving over to YouTube because it's giving them a place where they can share a bit more of themselves and have conversations and, you know, get that going. So that's one of the reasons to consider YouTube. But there's also some big cons that come with YouTube. And one is it's time consuming. You've got to learn how to create videos, and that's not an easy thing to just do and learn.
Well, forget about learning how to do it. You have to actually make them, and yeah, that takes a lot of time.
Yeah. So, you know, for us, because we are creating a lot of online classes anyway, you know what you're doing with a camera and all of that, it's a natural thing for us to consider. But I do understand that for many people it's a big leap to go onto YouTube and to get comfortable, whether you're talking in front of the camera or even just doing a voiceover, you've still got to get comfortable with talking, sharing. And one of the challenges is determining what to share on YouTube and how YouTube could work for you. Because if you are selling classes like we are, you're thinking about, okay, well, what do I share on YouTube versus what goes into my paid classes. If you're selling artwork, you're thinking sort of, how do I bring people along in the process in a way that would inspire them to then want to purchase the art or get behind it? So, you know, it's just figuring out how that might work.
There's two types of fan base. You have the fan base that will subscribe to your stuff and buy your stuff. And then you have the fan base that will just watch your stuff because it's free and they'll like the way you talk, but they're not interested in paying any money for your stuff at all. We purposely stayed away from YouTube so we could kind of build this list of our business where, you know, all of our content was sellable.
Yeah. I mean, if we're totally honest about it, we had concerns about how much free stuff you give away on YouTube. And I still see that when I watch people who have amazing content and maybe not a huge audience, so they're not necessarily reaping in the money from YouTube, I do feel like, oh gosh, that's a lot of amazing content.
And I mean amazing content, like amazing. And you're like, oh God.
But my thinking around YouTube has changed. I initially didn't want to engage with YouTube all that much because I just didn't think it was worth it. I didn't think people got enough through their creative fund or whatever, the way that YouTube pays revenue from the ads that people watch. All the videos I watched about that, it just didn't seem that great. But then I started thinking more about YouTube as being a little bit like Instagram, like a place to actually build a community rather than being so focused on I must get monetized, I must, you know, make an income. I'm not even worried about that side of YouTube at all. I'm not going on to YouTube for that reason. I'm going on to YouTube as a place to find people because I don't know where my people are anymore. I think a lot of my audience has moved then, and when I sent out this newsletter couple of weeks ago about this, a lot of people were saying, you know, I'm not really on Instagram anymore, but I have been watching YouTube or I'm back over on Pinterest. And so part of my reason for shifting things up a bit and focusing on some other apps is to actually reconnect with people that I used to connect with over on Instagram. And I'm also upping the game as far as my newsletter list because there are some people on my newsletter list that aren't on any social media at all. And that number is probably increasing. People are trying to get away from social media, Facebook, Instagram, there is, I think, more of a, I mean, I don't think blogging or anything was ever dead, but I think there is like a resurgence of blogging, newsletters and things like that happening, and that there are people that do want to sit down with a cup of tea and engage with this longer form content, which is like music to my ears because that's the kind of content I like making. And I mean, this podcast is a classic example because this was meant to be a short episode and I'm pretty sure it's not. I don't do short.
No.
I just can't seem to do short. Everything is big. I like to go deep with
bigger
stuff.
Bigger than Ben-Hur, as you say.
I like to go deep with things. And so, yeah, YouTube videos suits me because you can do longer videos. Blog posts suit me. And I use Pinterest as a tool to drive people over to things like my blog. So
if you were to say to me, pick one app and only one app, I would say, give me a flip phone with no social media on it and just leave me with YouTube.
I love YouTube Premium. It's definitely worth the investment to have an ad-free experience of YouTube. I was a super, super late adopter of YouTube. Like I used to like roll my eyes at you watching YouTube for years and years and years. And then in the last like year or two, I'm now obsessed with YouTube. But the quality of content on YouTube is just going up all the time. Like the what you can learn on YouTube and any of the things I'm talking about in this episode, like you can go on and get great tutorials on how to create YouTube videos, how to do Pinterest, like it's all on there. Just another thing I wanted to mention about YouTube, which is similar to Pinterest, is that it is a search engine and it also shows up in Google search. So I have YouTube videos that show up when people go to search for classes. And because I post my class trailers, when people put in search terms into Google for things like abstract painting class, what comes up in the search results can sometimes be one of my trailers on YouTube. So that works really well. And, you know, you could have other videos if you do art supply videos or studio tours or reviews of particular products, and they'll show up in Google. So there is quite good SEO when it comes to YouTube. And with the ability to include links in the descriptions, you can also drive traffic over to things through those links. Having said that, we watch almost all of our YouTube on the TV, so I don't really myself use links. Yeah, and I haven't experienced much traffic to my website from YouTube. So I don't think it's nearly as beneficial as Pinterest as far as the links go. And finally, I just want to touch on Vero, this new app that people are talking about, but we didn't know about it until a couple of days ago. It's very similar to Instagram, but it is ad-free, algorithm-free. It's basically trying to be what Instagram used to be. It blew up. I don't know if blew up's the right word because I still hadn't heard of it, so I don't feel like it must have had that much. It came out in 2015 and it had like an initial surge in 2018 where artists were looking at it and there was a bit of backlash on Instagram. And then people started digging into the owners of the app and their background, and they discovered that one of the owners had been very negligent in relation to paying staff to the point that the staff were starving. Like the government had to step in and sort out food and water and safe conditions for these workers. I'm not sure what country.
Pakistan or India.
This all came out into the public eye and then people started leaving the app. And so it never got off the ground, but it's just started to get some traction again.
A lot of traction.
Just in the last couple of days, this was like popping up everywhere. I'm not sure what's driving that exactly, but we had a look into it. I mean, it looks like it's got good features and functionality, but I think it will always be quite limited because it is going with that subscription model there. Yeah. Eventually, you will have to pay to use that app. I think the first certain number of people that join...
The first million.
Can join for free and they're sort of luring people in. But I think an app without a free sort of base option is always going to struggle with having the appeal of something like Facebook or Instagram. So I think maybe you could get a small little tight-knit community over there, But as far as it being like a powerhouse for running an art business, I'm not convinced. And I have never been an early adopter, and I don't feel like it's really hurt me to sort of sit back and wait and see how things pan out. Because when you go onto a new app, no matter what app you go onto, it's an investment in your time. You've got to learn the features. You'll usually go in there with a bit of enthusiasm. You'll be commenting, you'll be engaging. That's time. And I'd rather sit back and wait and see before I try and learn something new. So we won't be going over to Vero.
No, too many red flags as well. Like when we put in the search engine, or not the search engine, when we typed in Vero into YouTube, and the first six or seven thumbnails were stay away from Vero, reasons not to sign up, this is a scam. Like the very first five across the board. And I was like, wow, what's this? So I clicked on one. And it's things like the terms and conditions. Like you sign up, you have no way of changing your password. You have no way to delete the account. The guy that owns it is like barbaric when it comes to his staff and an old construction company that inherited it from his family. And it was just this kind of stuff. And it's just like red flag, red flag, red flag. Now I know people on TikTok sign away crazy things, but at least you can get off the app.
Yeah, I think that might have changed. It's very confusing because I went and had a look. I did a Google search on this app, Vero, and I got all these articles that were dated 2022, like updated 2022. But then when I read the article, it was from 2018.
Well, the guy I looked at had literally signed up yesterday. And the reason he signed up was because he wanted to be in the first million. But he wasn't. He was outside of it because the app is trending number one in the Apple store. So the million free subscriptions are gone. And he goes, okay, well then I'll just delete it. He can't delete it.
Right, okay. Yeah, I don't know. There's something very sketchy about it all when I looked at it, and the information out there just was very limited. So yeah, I'm not convinced.
No, have a look at it, see what happens and see how much it is.
I've also heard it's very glitchy. Like
that's because it's new. And
it's not going to have the robust capabilities that the bigger platforms have. So your data is always going to be at risk, or being able to access it, having periods where the whole thing is down. Like everyone has a complete uproar when Instagram's down for a day, but this app, you're more likely to have it down for a week or something while they sort things out.
What I've gotten from the content creators when I was doing my research on it, and when I say research, I'm five YouTube videos, but what they were saying was that don't create specific content for this app. Just share and grow.
Yeah, well, you know how through most of this episode I've been saying, you know, don't just push your content from one app to another, engage in a platform rather than doing that. Well, I think in this case, I'd say the opposite.
Yeah.
Just push stuff out. If you're posting something on Instagram, you want to test it out, just post it, redirect it over to Vero and just watch it for a little while. But do be mindful. It's a new app that we don't know a lot about. So it's wise to be a little bit cautious. All right, so where have we got to with all of that? So we've chatted about what's happened to Instagram, why it's happening, how artists feel about it, or at least some artists feel about it, and what are some of the other options out there. And really, there's no right or wrong with this. You have to ask yourself some questions about where you want to be, what you enjoy, what kind of content you like to create, and what skills you have, like what plays to your strengths. If you are really interested in writing, then using something like Pinterest to drive traffic to blog posts, or using Twitter where you can share your wit and banter could be the right place for you. If you are interested in experimenting with video, building a very engaged community, chatting, maybe something like YouTube could be an option. And Instagram's not dead yet.
No, it's still there.
I don't think this is a case of panic. I feel like this episode could be perceived that way. We're not saying that. I mean, all along we've said, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Be aware that Instagram may not be around forever. It could change, and adapt. Always grow your email list. Always try and direct people to your website. That is your safe place if you are running an art business. But yeah, otherwise, have a little bit of an experiment. Test the waters with a few places and see what suits you and your personality best. Well, that's it for this week. I hope that you've enjoyed this episode and this deep dive into today's world of social media. If you want to stay in touch, I would suggest heading on over to, I was going to say Instagram, because yes, you can still find me over on Instagram, but the best place to stay in touch is via my newsletter list. So make sure that you are on that. You can join that by heading over to laurahornart.com/newsletter. It's really good to be back. We're looking forward to hearing from you all. We really have missed the podcast. So I hope that you've enjoyed the episode and that you'll tune in again next time.